Welcome to the China MENA podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan Fulton, a non-resident senior fellow at the Atlantic Council and a political scientist at Zayed University in Abu Dhabi, United Arab Emirates. In December 2022, Chinese President Xi Jinping made a highly publicized visit to Saudi Arabia, where three summits were held and billions of dollars of deals and MOUs were signed. In the immediate aftermath, there was a tremendous momentum in China-MENA relations. Iranian President Raisi visited Beijing shortly after. There was the Saudi-Iran rapprochement announced in Beijing. Palestinian President Abbas visited, and Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu announced that he would visit later in the year as well, although that fell through for obvious reasons. As a result of all this high-profile symmetry and diplomacy, there was a widespread assumption that China was emerging as a major actor in the region. After the Hamas attack and subsequent war in Gaza, however, China's been less visibly active, confounding expectations of those who expected to see more leadership from Beijing. It's safe to say a lot of people are trying to make sense of what to expect in China and the Middle East. Our guest today will shed some light on this. I'm happy to be joined by Zheng Chuchu. Chuchu is an associate professor of international relations at the School of International Relations and Public Affairs at Fudan University in Shanghai, where she's also deputy director of the Center for Middle Eastern Studies. She received her PhD from the University of Cambridge, and her research focuses on Middle Eastern politics, Sino-Middle Eastern relations, and regional governance. She is among the most impressive scholars working on the Middle East and China today, and is someone I always learn a lot from whenever I get the chance to talk with her. Chuchu, welcome to the show. I'm so glad you could join us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, of course. It's really great you're doing this. So just to start, I think, in previous programs, we've talked a lot about what I or what other guests who are not in China, how we interpret China's interests in the Middle East. Of course, you're in the center of a lot of these conversations at your position at Fudan. So how would you define China's interests in the Middle East? What do you think are the primary considerations of Chinese decision makers when they're thinking and making decisions about the region?
Okay, first of all, I'm happy to be here. And also, I have always been enjoying discussing with Jonathan. So first of all, regarding China's interest in the Middle East, as we all know, the Middle East is an essential energy supplier for China, especially right now in the context of the Russian-Ukraine war. So everybody realizes the importance of fossil fuels. And I would say that the Middle East does not only have oil and gas, but the region also have vast deserts and abundant sunlight. So it's actively developing hydrogen and solar power. So I would say that in the future, it also has the potential to become the center for new energy. And that is also in the interest of China, of course. And apart from energy, the Middle East is also a big market for China. China is proud of being the manufacturer of the world. So for example, the region imports lots of manufactured products from China, and also it is a promising infrastructure market for China. Apart from energy and market, I would say that the Middle East is also a key partner for China's overseas cooperation under the Belt and Road Initiatives. Well, when it comes to the Belt and Road Initiatives, a lot of people are saying that the Belt and Road Initiative establishes connectivity between developing countries. It is true, but actually, China also wants to work with rich countries, right? The purpose is not just to work with developing countries, but if you look at the region of the Middle East, for instance, actually, there are a number of capital-intensive countries which situates somewhere between the developed and developing countries, particularly the GCC countries. So it means that when China operates with them, it does not need to invest everything. And China and the GCC countries can co-invest in many projects. And also right now, China both invites these countries to invest in Chinese projects within China, and also invite them to cooperate with China and co-invest with us in projects along the Belt and Road Initiatives in other countries, which is called third-party cooperation. And last, I would say that, so there is a saying that China has laid an increasing emphasis on the Middle East. But I would say that this saying is not the whole picture. While yes, it is true that China has paid attention to the region, but I don't see it as something surprising. actually, I would say that the whole world is looking at the region. It's not just about China. And the reason is very simple, because, you know, the international influence of the Middle East is on the rise. So, for instance, in the past, there is a saying, the destiny of the Middle East is not decided in the region, but in Washington or in London. But right now, you will find that not only that many negotiations about regional affairs are actually taking place in Doha or Abu Dhabi or Dubai, but also many thorny issues, hot issues outside the region cannot be discussed without participation of Middle Eastern actors. And an example that is very obvious is the Afghanistan issue. And we have to keep in mind that the Middle East is in the intersection of the East and the West. So lots of dialogues between the East and the West go through the region. So I think it's not just China, but many powers also show great interest in the region.
Mm. That's a great overview. I think it's telling that you started, you know, mostly with economic issues and then later tagged on the geopolitical. Do you think that's an indication of how people think of China's position, that it's first and foremost an economic actor and strategic or geopolitical issues come after?
Right. So it's like, so traditionally it's like China's relations with the Middle East starts from energy and economic sectors. But later, well, first of all, of course, since China's economic interests increase, then it has to look into the geopolitical issues, especially like after the Arab Spring, the geopolitical landscape is becoming more complicated in the region. But at the same time, I would say that also is that the region itself is becoming important. So you will see that it's not just, we often say that, okay, the Middle East is looking east, but actually at the same time, the East is also looking at the Middle East. So it's not just about China.
Right. Okay. And I agree with everything you've just said. I've been kind of making a similar argument for a while, but I think what a lot of people started to pay attention in a much more focused way when, you know, you could see in the past couple of years, there have been a lot of really high profile events. And I think President Xi's visit to Riyadh in December 22 was probably the biggest. Because, you know, a few months before that, you had President Joe Biden visit Saudi, and that visit wasn't seen as particularly successful. I think on either side, it looked like the relationship wasn't particularly strong at that moment. And then a few months later, when President Xi arrives and they roll out the purple carpet, and there's, you know, all of these leaders from the region who arrive. And I think whether it's accurate or not, a lot of people do a contrast and saw, you know, China's kind of this ascendancy and bigger role. But like you say, this is something that's been building for quite a while. In terms of diplomatic and strategic affairs, you know, do you think it's accurate, this idea that people have that China is becoming much more prominent and that it's willing to use this political capital it's been developing through trade and investment and BRI infrastructure contracts? Is that going to result in China developing a more strategic or diplomatic presence in the region?
So indeed, I think China is actually playing a bigger role in the region. And as China's interests in the Middle East are increasing, as there are lots of investments and construction projects going on, China has to engage more in regional affairs. And only in this way can China protect its own personnel safety and commercial interests. Otherwise, if you just invest in the region, but you do nothing like engaging in the political affairs there, then it's very likely that when a risk happens, you can't really, you know, protect your own interests. But actually, I think it is important to note that China itself cannot just do whatever it wants. So on the one hand, if the Middle Eastern actors do not accept that China takes a bigger role, then China cannot do it. So the context is that today the Middle Eastern states, they also pursue strategic autonomy, and also they are trying to diversify their diplomatic partners. And also like the regional actors collectively looking east and launch various missions like Saudi Vision 2030. 2030, etc. And this kind of things provides an opportunity for China to expand its influence in the region. So I think it's a two-way interaction rather than a unilateral action of China. And also, on the other hand, also I would say that the United States and the other established powers in the region are not like entirely opposed to China playing a more prominent role in the region. And if we look at, for instance, the coverage of the United States or like the Western media, actually there are a lot of coverages and reports which encourages China's participation in Middle Eastern issues like combating piracy, like counterterrorism, like climate change issues, also like Iran's nuclear agreement, and also like providing assistance to the region, which helps to address the shortage of local public goods, right? And also, I think there are lots of overlapping interests between Washington and Beijing in the Middle East. While China does not want war and instability in the region, but I would say so does the United States and European Union. So there are a lot of common interests. But right now, I would say that there is a big challenge. While there are a lot of challenges, but one of the most important challenges for China when it takes a bigger role in the region is that whatever it does, it is very likely to encounter criticism. So for instance, when China takes little action in a regional conflict, people are saying, ah, see, China is trying to avoid its responsibilities as a big power. But on the other hand, when China takes a lot of actions, then people are saying again, well, you are a threat, you are trying to fill the vacuum in the region. Is it that you are like very ambitious and want to challenge United States hegemony or whatever? So it's like, China is always at the defending side, and also, like I would say, when the other's expectations of China's role is very vague, then it's very hard for China to perform its role at the moment.
There's a lot of interesting points you brought up, but I was thinking while you're talking, obviously you're a Middle East specialist, so when you're thinking about the region, you're bringing your own preferences and your own experiences into it. But just generally, how does the Middle East feature among people in China? You know, maybe people who think about international relations, people who are thinking about foreign policy issues. Does the Middle East, is this a prominent region in the minds of a lot of Chinese people? Is this something that they think about as an important thing for China?
Right now, I would say yes. So first of all, like, these days, especially after October the 7th last year. So right now, I think it's a hot issue because like, so both Chinese and international news have a big focus on the region. So everybody is concerned with what's going on, especially when right now there is not just a war between Palestine and Israel, but also like there is war, airstrikes, for instance, in Yemen, in Iraq and Syria, right? So of course it's a hot topic, but at the same time, you see, so right now, like the relations between China and the Middle East is really on the rise, and there are a lot of things going on, a lot of projects. So, for instance, many businessmen think that maybe there is going to be more opportunities for cooperation in the future, and even like overseas students, for instance. So, a lot of students in China, so in the past, it's like a lot of them choose to go to either the United States or like European countries. But today, many of them are also thinking of the Middle East. Well, one of the reasons is that there are lots of actually European and American universities which have campuses in the Middle East, of course. So like people are learning about the region and they know more about the place, and they think that, so it's like in the past, like everybody thinks that probably it's somewhere very dangerous, a lot of risks, but right now, like they know better about the place and they're trying to develop the knowledge about it.
Mm. But just, you know, in terms of, and I agree, because I can see being based here in Abu Dhabi, you know, we've been seeing a lot more over the past, I'd say, 6 to 8 months, a lot more people from China coming in, whether they're coming as business people or investors or companies looking to you know, either get investors or to start a project. It's been moving a lot in that direction in the past few months, which I think everybody's happy about after a dry spell post-COVID. But at the same time, just, you know, in terms of like a foreign policy hierarchy of interests, like, you know, obviously decision makers can't give equal attention to everything. You've got limited bandwidth, limited time and resources. Is the Middle East anywhere near the top of the agenda, do you think, for people in Beijing when they're thinking about the world?
Right. Regarding the hierarchy of like our foreign agenda. So I would say that China doesn't want to. So first of all, like China does not have a lot of core interests in the region. So when we talk about core interests, like for instance, like one China policy, like our territorial issues, like sovereignty, all those things. So we don't have this kind of things in the Middle East. So that is the first thing. And the second point is that China does not want to confront the United States in the Middle East because, okay, there are a lot of other things to worry about, but why don't we confront them in the Middle East, right? So I would say that it's not like a first or top priority of China at the moment, but of course its importance is like on the rise. So of course there is the energy issue, there is the economic issue, and also like the place itself is becoming more and more important because on the one hand, like they have a big influence on what's going on in the other parts of the world. And secondly, I would say that the Middle East is not just a region, but also it's like an arena for big power struggling. So what's going on in the Middle East is not only like, it's not that just the regional players are struggling with each other in the region, but also like big powers in the world is also playing, doing a lot of actions in the region, right? So that is what makes the region very important. And also, as I just mentioned, it's also like an intersection between the East and West because so the region, if you want to like talk to the West, for instance, and a lot of this kind of negotiation also have a relation to the region, and that's what makes the region very important right now.
Yeah. So you mentioned a few minutes ago, October 7th, and I just wonder how much that is a pivot point in the eyes of people in China when they think about the region. Like, is this really causing a recalibration? Are people thinking about, should China approach the region differently? How has it changed the landscape for folks in China?
First of all, so China thinks that its own Middle East policy has some kind of consistency. So China has always insisted that Palestinian-Israeli affair is the core issue of the Middle East peace process. So it's like over the past few years when everybody was talking about the Abraham Accord and a lot of people, think that, okay, there is going to be Arab-Israel reconciliation. China never believed that the Arab-Israel reconciliation can work without solving the conflicts between Israel and Palestine. So that is the first, policy. And secondly, I would say that after the eruption of the wall between Hamas and Israel after October 7th last year, I think that right now, a lot of like Chinese Middle Eastern specialists or strategists are perceiving the event as an indicator to test the effectiveness of the United States hegemony in the Middle East. So it's like, okay, if under the United States support, if Israel achieves its three goals it proposed, including eliminating Hamas, including safely rescuing all the hostages and lifting the security threat to Israel in Gaza, then it indicates that the United States hegemony remains strong. But otherwise, if these kind of goals have not been achieved, then it probably indicates that the hegemony of the United States in the region or its capacity of shaping the landscape in the region is not like before. And meanwhile, I think that China is also concerned about the relationship between the Russian-Ukraine conflict and the Palestine-Israel conflict. So just as we just discussed, when we talk about the Middle East, the importance of the region is that it's not just about this particular region, but also like its destiny and what happened in the region is also related to the other regions and other important like powers. So in recent months, it's like the international focus has been on the Palestine-Israel conflict, and people discuss less about what happens in Ukraine and Russia, and even a lot of aid comes to Israel. Right, so it's not going to Ukraine. So right now, what's going to happen, and so how the ongoing Palestine-Israel conflict can affect the warfare between Russia and Ukraine, I think China is also concerned with that. So I would say that the Palestine-Israel conflict is not just about Palestine and Israel right now. The United States has started to launch airstrikes against Syria and Iraq. And we know that Syria is Russia's most important foothold in the region. So is that going to affect Russia's influence on the region? I think that is another concern.
So you mentioned a couple of minutes ago that U.S. and China, there's a consistency of interest in the region. And you were also talking just a minute ago about U.S. hegemony in the region. So how comfortable do you think Chinese leaders are with the idea of a U.S.-centered Middle Eastern order? I mean, I know that it doesn't look right now, it doesn't look like there's much in the way of order in the region. But if I look at the countries that China does the most with, In the Middle East, a lot of those countries like the Emirates and in Saudi Arabia and Egypt are U.S. allies or partners. So China works very closely with countries that have very dense relationships with the U.S. What do you think the relationship between this China-U.S. Middle East triangle is from Beijing's perspective?
Right, there is a triangle, and the issue is that, so first of all, there does not have to be a confrontation. So for instance, we often talk about like choosing sides, but the issue is that although there are some competitions between China and United States, but as I just mentioned, that they have also a lot of like overlapping interests. There are a lot of things that they can do together in the region. And also like, they don't have a lot of like core topics that they have to be in confrontation with each other. I mean, they can have more disputes on the other issues. So it's not just necessarily about this particular region in the Middle East. So that is the first issue. And also like we also have to ask about the regional actors' opinion, because we often say that it's like the big powers are playing the region, but actually like who is playing? How about the regional actors? They have a lot of like their own interests, like so actually the regional actors in many occasions they are playing a very active role. And they don't want, they are not like before, and they no longer want to just become allies of one particular camp or actor. And what they are doing right now is just to pursue diversification of their partners in the world. So that is how I look at, you know, the triangle issue. It's like, it's not like, okay, are you going to choose between McDonald's or KFC? Why don't I just have dinner in McDonald's, but I can also have lunch in KFC.
Nice. Well, we should write a paper, you know, using fast food restaurants as an analogy for Middle Eastern politics. I don't think that's been done yet. No, it's interesting because, like you said, from local actors' perspectives, you know, and we've had several people from the region on this show, and they've given a very similar, you know, overview to what you've just said of their approach. But it's interesting because it's rare we hear directly from Chinese Middle East specialists. So it's a useful perspective, I think, for our audience. I'd happen to agree. I think that, you know, just looking at the indicators of China's presence, a lot of it, like I said, are with, you know, the places where China's the deepest are also places that have U.S. security commitments. So it seems to me that leaders in China don't really see, you know, their relationship with the U.S. as, you know, something that is necessarily a negative thing, at least when they look at the Middle East. But, you know, that's that gets more into the thinking of domestic political actors, and we're not going to really hear from these guys in either country. Just coming back to kind of regional hotspot events, there's been a lot of talk recently about the Red Sea, you know, because obviously China's got a lot of assets, a lot of investments on both sides, on both coastlines of the Red Sea. There's a very large expatriate population in the Middle East. I've heard, you know, maybe about 500,000 Chinese people live in the region. That would kind of lead us to expect China would play a pretty big role in regional affairs when things start to look very fragile, like they have been recently. So would you anticipate China playing a more active role in addressing the Houthi attacks in the Red Sea?
Right. I would say that China is very concerned with what's going on in the Red Sea. And first of all, I think we have to make it very clear that China is also a big victim of the Red Sea crisis. It's not a beneficiary at all. Disruption of the navigation in the Red Sea actually negatively affects the trade flows between China and the Middle East and also the Europe. So, for instance, I am currently based in Shanghai, and lots of businessmen in Shanghai are very worried and sad because the transport fees and insurance costs are rising. It has a very big negative impact on our trade. So China calls for maintaining international navigation order. Also, as you know, China has the Maritime Silk Road. So any kinds of obstruction of maritime shipping channels is not in line with China's own interests. But I think that right now, people are saying, for instance, China's actions, I would say that China is very concerned about the boundaries of actions of external intervention in the region, because right now the situation is becoming more and more complicated. And I think maybe in particular, China is worried about the escalation of proxy conflicts in Yemen, which it believes can only worsen the regional security situation. So it's at present, there are airstrikes against the Houthi rebels. But the purpose of these actions are very vague and not very clear. So China's concerns, is it going to work and really solve the problem? Does it really help? So China is worried that this kind of airstrikes can provide an opportunity for external powers to intervene in Yemen's political process and shape a political landscape conducive to pro-American forces. And what can make it even worse is that this kind of actions can also provoke a new round of power struggle and proxy wars between Saudi Arabia and Iran in Yemen, which is not what China wants to see.
So when you talk about proxy warfare, that really kind of anticipated my next question, because a lot of the issues that have been shaping regional events, especially recently, but obviously for far longer, are coming from non-state actors, whether you've got the Hamas attack or the Houthi attack or the threat of Hezbollah getting more deeply involved in these militias in Iraq. Of course, China has made it pretty clear over the past several decades that sovereignty and non-interference in domestic affairs is a very important priority for them. And I think a lot of that is because of China's own potential weakness. If China were to engage with non-state actors here, then what's to stop anybody from engaging with, you know, people in Xinjiang or Tibet or Hong Kong or whatever? So how does China reconcile this? What influence or engagement can or does China have with these types of groups that are shaping events in a way that's disruptive to its interests, while at the same time respecting sovereignty and trying to, you know, stay out of that side of things?
Right. And this is also a very interesting question. I think that, so China still, I anticipate that China will still insist on the intergovernmental interactions as it usually does. And it will only interact with governments or the authorities recognized by the United Nations. But I think not engaging or not directly engaging with non-governmental armed groups does not mean that these groups are not considered as important. So I think China's logic is very simple. It does not want to interfere with the internal affairs of the other countries, and as you mentioned, the other sovereignty issues. And in return, of course, China expects that it doesn't want other countries to interfere with its own internal affairs through these kind of like non-governmental groups. So that is its like diplomatic principle. And second, there is another issue, because actually, I think just now you used a very interesting word, that is the weakness. Actually, I think China considers that there is also a risk of working with non-governmental armed groups. When you say like weakness, then there should be like the opposite word, that is advantage. So I would say that the advantage of working with these groups is that they are very flexible. But the disadvantage of working with non-governmental armed groups is that they are very flexible, because they do not need to comply with United Nations Charter or international norms, etc. So like for the non-government armed groups, the cost of violating international law or violating contract is minimal. For instance, China, as we just mentioned, like it always has a principle of not working with non-government groups. So it's like it doesn't have rich experience. But let's say the United States, it has rich experience in this sense, but even the United States, sometimes it finds it very difficult to control the armed groups it works with. For instance, let's see what's going on in Syria, etc. So sometimes when the big powers work with the armed groups, they can become very passive in many cases. So I think China is very careful about it. And thirdly, I think today we see a lot of proxy wars, not only in the Middle East, but also in the world. And this is because, as you mentioned, again, there is advantage of working with non-government armed groups, because a lot of big powers, they are reluctant to engage in direct combat, direct confrontation themselves. And like in order to save the cause and avoid risks, they support non-government groups to do things for them as agents. But China believes that if itself engages with this kind of groups, then it can only exacerbate proxy conflicts and make the regional situation even more complicated. So on the one hand, China wants to do business with everybody, so escalation of proxy conflicts is not something China wants. But on the other hand, making a balance between different sides in the region is already very difficult for China, you see. And like if you try to engage with non-governmental groups, as there are many of them, very complicated, and this can only make things more difficult, and it can add pressure for China and its officials, which is obviously not in China's interest, I would say.
Mm-hmm. So the common thread in each of those actors we're talking about is Iran, you know, whether it's Hezbollah or Hamas or the Houthis. Iran is very deeply engaged with each of them, and of course, China and Iran have a comprehensive strategic partnership agreement. China's always Iran's number one trade partner. They cooperate in BRICS now and SCO, Shanghai Cooperation Organization, as well. And I know that this relationship is one that people outside the region focus on a lot. There's a deep concern that that China and Iran working in tandem, and especially with Russia these days, is something that could undermine regional stability or other actors' interests. How do you think we should think about this bilateral China-Iran partnership?
Right. So first of all, indeed, I agree that today China and Iran have very intimate relations with each other. Of course, China has lots of interests in Iran, such as energy. But also, I would say it is very important to note that China focuses on its own national interests, of course. So in recent years, people are saying that, okay, China has sometimes criticized the United States on Iranian issues, for instance. But I would say from my own observation, that is because the United States policies in Iran, such as some of the sanctions, they have harmed China's own interests, like China's like own business with Iran is also like affected. So the logic is not that because China wants to choose sides or stands by Iran and criticizes the United States, but it's that China wants to safeguard its own interests. And that is a very important concern. And the second issue is that some commentators believe that China is kind of like siding with Iran and the so-called Shia arc, including many of the groups you have just mentioned in our previous question. But I would say, in fact, the Shia arc is not always acting in one voice. And also, like, from the perspective of China, it's not like, it's Iran that is deciding everything. And it's not that straightforward, right? And you can't just deny that there are a lot of autonomies of the armed groups themselves. Also, if you look at how China interacts with regional powers, you will find a very interesting issue is that although there are lots of multilateral mechanisms, China is better at and more used to developing bilateral relations. So it's like China lacks the intention and capacity and tradition to work with the so-called Shia clique as a whole. Another point I would add is that the close relationship between China and Iran right now, I think it's just a manifestation of the diversification of diplomatic partners between both sides. Okay, so on the one hand, China does not just approach Iran. Yes, there are a lot of interactions, intimate cooperation between the two parts, but it's not just about China and Iran. China has also established closer ties with Saudi Arabia, Egypt, the UAE, etc., as we have just discussed. And it's the same thing for the part of Iran. It's not just developing ties with China. And if you look at what's going on in recent years, it has also like close ties with India, as well as many other powers. So it's like working like for both sides. Last but not least, when it comes to the very interesting international organizations like the BRICS or SCO, as you have just mentioned, I think we are used to asking questions like why something happens, but we can also ask questions in another way around. We can also ask why not. So for example, I think there is a rule in international relations that diplomatic isolation can easily trigger a country's anti-international system behavior. So it's like if Iran or another country is absorbed into the multilateral international organizations, then of course it will help enhance Iran's international responsibility and reduce their anxiety caused by diplomatic isolation. So why not? And at the same time, from the perspective of the functionalist theory, you know, putting conflicting parties into one platform and multilateral mechanisms can also help promote cooperation and trust among them. Very obvious example is the European Union, right? It itself is a mechanism for resolving conflicts between Germany and France, etc. So why not encouraging Iran and Saudi to work together in international organizations?
Inshallah.
Inshallah, right.
Yeah. Okay, well, last question. We talked just now about the Iran-China partnership. This is a mechanism I think that's very interesting. I know your colleague Sundar Gang has written a lot on China's partnership diplomacy. I think what we see through its partnership agreements in the region and its economically driven approach to the region, the one thing that characterizes the Middle East is a lot of intense regional rivalries. Yet China's deftly managed to avoid overtly taking sides in any of them. For a lot of people outside observing this, they think this is not sustainable, that eventually China's going to have to pick sides. What do you think is, you know, in something like the China-Iran rivalry or, you know, is China going to be able to maintain this balancing act indefinitely?
Right. This is also like a very interesting question. First of all, I think a very important. So I think there is a very different mindset regarding this issue when it talks about China. So I think China does not assume that the sectarian confrontation in the Middle East is ingrained. So in fact, like the regional actors do not have to confront each other and fight each other. So when we talk about taking sides, a lot of people may think that, okay, there is already like a confrontation between different parts and now we have to choose sides. But China does not think in that way. So China has proposed the concept of promoting peace through development. A lot of people are talking about it. And many people, when they try to interpret this new term, they think that, okay, it means China wants to promote regional states to work with each other. And so they have a lot of common interests. And so so it's going to like to promote peace. But many people, they are saying this model is not always working because it's not going to solve like all of the problems there. Well, I want to say that that is only part of the picture, because actually I, from my own observation, there may be another meaning of promoting peace through development. So that is, why don't we rethink our diplomatic agenda, as you just mentioned, like the hierarchy of foreign, of the national interests of our agenda. So what is the priority for a country? Do we want to develop our countries, right? Or should we prioritize confrontation with other regional actors and invest everything fighting each other? So what is the priority? And I think the most important point about the reconciliation between Saudi Arabia and Iran is not to show how great China is, but is to show that there does not have to be sectarian confrontation in the region. So in other words, we may not assume that there are sectarian camps and we have to choose sides, but maybe the assumption itself is questionable. And the second issue is that China does not want to choose sides because it believes that this kind of behavior will lead to rigidity of international relations. And if you look at China's own, you know, foreign policy right now, it seeks to have more space of flexibility. So, and I think for the other side, like the Middle East countries are thinking the same way. So it's like both China and the Middle Eastern countries are pursuing strategic autonomy and wants to give themselves flexible space for actions. So in fact, I think the Middle Eastern countries, they themselves, they also do not want to be deeply bound to China and choose sides between China and the United States, right? So the same logic also applies to China. So for both sides, I think neither China nor Middle Eastern actors want to choose sides. And I think there is another important point, which is also very interesting, is that today, even if you ask China and you push China to choose sides in the region, I think it doesn't know how, because you see the Middle Eastern geopolitical landscape is becoming unprecedentedly complicated. So the region does not only have two camps, but have, I would say, highly diversified interests. So for instance, regarding the ongoing Israel-Palestinian conflict, is it that there are only two camps? Okay, on one side there is Arab countries, on the other side there is Israel. It's not like that. So right now, what do Arab countries think about Palestine-Israeli conflicts? Right, there are a lot of things going on, but as we just discussed, a lot of actions are taken by non-governmental groups, right? But how about the governments? A lot of Arab governments, they don't have a big voice, right? And they are not doing much. So it's not like they are just two camps, right? Like one side there is Arab states, one side there is Israel. It's not like that. And also, if you talk about Iran and Saudi Arabia, it's also not like before. I don't think right now like there is a real like confrontation between Sunni and Shia camps. Then what is Qatar doing, like, right? And also Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates, like they have lots of disputes with each other, lots of competition. So it's like even if you want China to take sides, it doesn't know like where to stand.
That's great. Chuchu, thanks so much for doing this. It was really fun for me to see you again. And I'm sure our listeners got a lot out of this. I think you gave a really useful perspective, and I hope we can do this again sometime soon.
Thank you so much. Thanks so much, Jonathan, and have a nice day. Thank you.
Thanks, you too. And to our listeners, thank you for joining us. We've got a really great show lined up next, so come listen again, and make sure you go on to all those podcast platforms and like and rate and subscribe and do all that good stuff. Thank you all very much.